Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to The Normal Blokes, a podcast dedicated to improving the competitive 40K experience. This is episode 86, and tonight, as always, my name is Liam, and I'm joined by Luke. How are you, Luke?
Hey, good man. How are you?
I'm going pretty well. Luke and I are going to be covering a pretty interesting topic tonight for anybody who has been sort of focused on the developing secondaries and missions for 9th edition. We have a very own stats whiz, Luke, who has broken down and made charts for easy reading for all of the secondaries and points scored to win for 9th edition. This is all of the information available from the ITC Battles app. Luke, why don't you run us through some of the stuff that you've got?
Yeah, love to. Hey, so I talked to the creator of the ITC Battles app, and he kindly gave me access to the data, as well as Joshua Diffie from Down Under Pairings. So this data is all from practice games and tournament games, and it tracks all the secondary scores over all those games. Now, there is a large number of games in total. However, there's a different spread between, obviously, tournament games and practice games, since the app doesn't really discriminate particularly everything by that. With some extra filtering, you can eventually find it, but for today, we just mixed together both, so we get a nice sample size to work with. So there was a total of 29,000 games of 9th edition, and recorded by the ITC Battles app and Down Under Pairings was 24,000 practice games and 5,000 tournament games. So,
wow.
Yeah, about 16% of games played are tournament games, and the rest are practice games. However, this still gives us a good sort of, a good sort of forecast for what the secondaries, how the secondaries are performing, and what sort of opinions we can form based on those secondaries.
But I mean, no matter how many practice games or tournament games you play, you're not even approaching several dozen thousand games of Warhammer 40K. So, I mean, these stats are, I think, more accurate information than I could ever personally get or you could ever personally get, you know, just sort of playing games on your own, seeing what works and what doesn't. This is kind of like reasonably objective evidence from a large sample size.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely objective because it doesn't filter for region as well, which is quite interesting. So obviously we're aware that, you know, Australia has a meta, America has a meta.
And Europe has a meta.
All three continents have their own metas, gameplay styles. Even your local tournament has, you know, a meta. But this is the objective based on how the secondary itself performs amongst all metas. So I think it gives us a good grasp on which secondaries are strong and which are weak.
100%. And the other thing that Luke mentioned before we started recording to me is as well that this information, whilst we can't 100% verify that's the case, we're going through a lot of these results individually. It's quite clear that these are games that have got to turn 5. Because one of my concerns is that some of the secondaries, for example, that might be underscoring, might be end of game scoring objectives for games that were just called early. So they're scored a 0 falsely, but that does not seem to be the case. Most of these seem to go to turn 5.
Yeah. So I went through and did a quick sift through just to make sure that all the games that Josh is one of the collectors, Josh DeBoer from ITC Battles, to make sure that all the data he collected was completed games, because obviously if a secondary is end of game scoring and you don't complete the game, you don't get the points. So we were just sifted through, and as far as I could tell, I'm confident more than 99% of the games were completed. I couldn't find ones that weren't, but maybe I missed them because there are 29,000 games that I didn't get to verify every single one of them.
How dare you? You didn't sift through them all individually, Luke. This is what we pay you nothing an hour for.
I did my very best. I'm confident there are none, dude. But I will always say 99% just in case someone finds one and goes, you're wrong.
You have actually done amazingly. Now, one thing that I think is going to be really interesting is when Luke and I have a chat about this, obviously raw numbers and data synthesis doesn't always make for the most absolutely riveting and interesting podcast. But if you're going to listen to any of our episodes, I think that this episode in particular will be something that people can use to model how to create a list from scratch from. Because what we've talked about a couple of times before is always building a list to do certain secondaries. Make sure you're playing your own game and making sure your list can achieve certain results. Now, that's all well and good, but obviously there's like 40 different secondaries. So when we talk about numbers here, Luke and I now have some strong numbers to show which of those secondaries you should probably be aiming to do based objectively on results, and also how many points you should be trying to get in a game. And that might sound like a ridiculous concept, but I think we'll break that down in a bit more detail later because we have some interesting data on that. So Luke, would you like to start, I guess, with either the points scored to win, or should we dive into some secondaries? What do you think we should talk about?
I think a good precedent to start with would be the points scored to win, because it's actually really interesting. So Josh had put together a graph based on the tournament scores and practice games of how many points you score total, including primary and secondary, and your win probability. According to those points. And it's very, very, very interesting, actually, because a lot of times you play a game, you're like, man, I got 60 points and doing really well. But the data would say otherwise, actually. So about the 50% ratio for when it's when you're 50-50% chance to win, is at about the 70 points mark. At both practice and tournament games, at 70 points, cumulative of primary and secondary, you have a 50-50% chance to win. So,
and what's really interesting about that is at that 50-50 point, this part of the curve. So I guess to put in perspective, this graph, you know, has a measure of, as Luke mentioned, both practice and tournament games. There's actually quite little variation between those two figures when you get above about 60 points. Before that, there's a bit of a bigger gap between the two in lower scoring games. But when you're at about 65, 70 points, when Luke mentioned your win percentage is about 50-50, the difference between practice and tournament is negligible. Like it's pretty much identical. And that already goes to show that scoring 60 points, I mean, if you're playing, let's say, in a practice game, if you're scoring 60 points, you have less than a 40% chance of winning, which is already, you know, pretty bad. But if you're playing in a tournament game, it's looking closer to 30% chance to winning with only 60 points. So less than a 1 in 3, which is already showing that if you've built a list that, and you can say, oh, I'm always going to score 60 points, and you're looking at a singles environment, that's frankly just not good enough. It's actually not a high chance of you ever winning games.
Yeah, it definitely... It definitely speaks to the different types of experiences you get from a tournament game and a practice game. A tournament game, obviously, I think when you verse someone, people aren't just there to score their own points. They're also there to prevent you from scoring points. Whereas in a practice game, you're less. I would argue that you're less focused on denying your opponent points. So that would probably account for the lower probability based on the points you scored there. Does that make sense? So yeah, because it's harder for you to score points. So at a lower points level, you're less likely to win.
And obviously, I mean, as the curve goes both ways, if somebody's getting, for argument's sake, 100 points, the odds of your opponent also getting 90 points, for example, is very low overall. Like if somebody's getting 100, that's because they've pushed you into the dirt pretty thoroughly, and odds are you're going to be getting like a lower score overall. And I think that's why, based on tournament results, when you're looking at, you know, the 40 point mark, your chance of winning is inordinately low. If you get 40 points, your chance of winning, I think at that exact point, looks less than around about 15%, if not a little bit higher, which is very, very, very low. Which is interesting because that means somebody's won a game getting 40 points. I'm impressed by that. I can't say that's awesome. Well done.
Interesting, yeah. But the other thing that's super interesting is that from about 0 to 60 points, or 0 to 70 points even, your win probability is rather like horizontal, like it's rather stagnant, ranging from about the 20% chance to 40% chance area. But then as soon as you hit 70 points, your chance to win goes up exponentially. So from 70 points to 80 points, your win probability goes up 30%. So 10 points at the higher bracket increases your chance by 3 times.
So basically, almost every point you score above 70 is
It's.
drastically increasing your chance of winning games overall.
Yep, exactly. It almost 3 times more important than a point below 70.
Now that's actually really interesting because, especially in the current meta, I often hear, for example, Dark Angel players talking about how they can guarantee, for example, they're going to score 65 to 80, roughly, without leaving their deployment zone. But interestingly, the lower half of that estimate, which in my experience I found to be more accurate, like around about 60 to 65, if you're scoring that, that's actually not impressive. That number sounds good when somebody tells you that. But if you look at this data objectively, if somebody scores even let's say 70 points bang on, their chance of winning games is 50-50. It's a coin flip. And if your competitive tournament build is built around reliably scoring about 70 points, then that is actually not very good statistically, apparently. I'm basing that opinion 100% off the data I have in front of me. I'm really sorry.
No, I mean it's really it shocked me because sometimes you hear someone go, "Oh yeah, I lost, 95 to 65." You're like, "Man, that was a close game." But like really when you look at the stats, it makes a
That's
lot
about
more
right.
sense, right? Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. And I think what I like about looking at this data is that you can already see that I think lists that are perhaps built around the concept of reliably scoring and safely scoring are good in one sense, but it's quite clear from these numbers to me that you need to be able to deny your opponent points to reliably win games. Because if you're getting reliably 70 points and your opponent's getting reliably 70 points, then you are in no better position. Like, that's pretty obvious. But also, if even if you're reliably getting something like 60 points, odds are you're going to lose the game. That the reliability of you scoring is almost not as important as you making sure your opponent can't just do whatever they want.
Exactly. And one final thing I think is really important that ties into this curve here is that secondaries that are scored like While We Stand, We Fight become even more critical. Because if you're taking if you pick While We Stand and your opponent kills your three While We Stands, not only do you lose 15 crucial points, it's basically you lose 15 points and inadvertently they can sort of gain points, if that makes sense. The differential between you two gets drastically reduced, which means I think it will impact your win probability much more than what you would originally think. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, it does because like when you lose the While We Stand, you're losing any chance to ever get those points back. Whereas if you lose like one turn of primary, it's not impossible for you to get 45. Like overall, you can still get three turns of 15. So it's kind of like a loss you can't recoup from. And that's why I think it'd be really good for us to talk about While We Stand in particular for secondaries, because in my very limited experience, and I say that because obviously I've played quite a few games of 40K, but that's nothing compared to 50,000 games on ITC Battles app. My games mean nothing statistically, in terms of what this represents. But in my experience, While We Stand has been a very good secondary, and has always seemed to score about 10 to 15 points for that. Obviously not always, but reliably seems to score that. And I think that is reflected in the results. So Luke and I have had a bit of a chat about, the points I guess needed to win a 40K game and what that means. And Luke, out of curiosity, and you can totally edit this out if you don't want to, but are we going to post these two photos that you've sent me? Because I think these graphs will actually be really interesting for people to have a look at.
Yes, I definitely will post these. I will post these probably to our page, both our Facebook page
Awesome.
and our internet website.
That's going to be great. So people, please have a look at this points scored to win graph to sort of, I guess, get a visual of this, because it's actually so interesting to look at, to see that curve around the 70-point mark that Luke mentioned.
And one final thing to highlight before we move on to our individual secondaries, and this will highlight the importance of the secondaries in making a good choice. So if you look at the graph when it's available to you, 45 points for primary puts you at about a 30% win chance, which means your secondaries become super critical. And if you are to get to the 50-50% win ratio from your secondaries, you'll need at least 25 points from your secondaries to make the game a 50-50 chance. So what that means is from each secondary, you're looking for about an 8 point for each secondary to put you at 50-50 win chance. So that highlights the importance of picking good secondaries and making sure that you actually score your secondaries before the end of the game.
Because that again is quite interesting, because if you need to average 8 points from your secondaries, that really makes me doubt some secondary choices that, like I've personally taken, because I sometimes say to myself, oh yeah, I'm going to get like, I don't know, six, seven, eight for that secondary, but I can't think of anything better. That's just straight up, that's average or below average. Sure, if you literally cannot pick anything better, but it might almost be worth it statistically to go for a riskier choice, because choosing that average choice, if your opponent makes equally average choices, this graph shows that, your chance of winning is not actually improved simply by being safe.
And even though, so just keep in mind the graph accounts for you getting 10 points from your battle
Of
ready
course,
army,
yeah.
but your opponent's in the same situation, so to
Yeah.
be at that same threshold.
So, the range of data here is 10 points to 100 points, which I think is what most people are sort of used to scoring, not just in tournament games, but in practice games as well.
So just putting that into more perspective, then if you were to get, you need at least, what, 15, so five from each primary to get a 50-50 win ratio now, if you get the battle ready, which I assume everybody's getting battle ready, right?
I mean,
If you're at a
yeah,
tournament
look,
not getting battle ready, you're there for
but
fun, not
no,
for the game.
not even that. If you're at a practice game and one person's getting battle ready and another person's not getting battle ready, I have lots of questions to ask to both of these players. There's many questions that need to be answered.
Yeah,
But
for
anyway,
sure. Okay. All right. So let's get into it, hey?
so before we dive into the secondaries, what's cool here is you now know that. For me, anyway, when I'm looking at this data, Luke, I'm now thinking 70 points plus. You know what I mean? Like that is like where my line is of increasing value, sorry, increasing chances that I'm going to win this game of 40K. So when I look at these secondaries, something that averages five, for example, even if it's 100% you get five or better, if the average is like five or six, that's actually not good enough. But I'm not at a point where I'm getting close to that 70. And so I would not be happy with that second. And I think probably the best place to start, I mean, sequentially, right? Going to start with the purge the enemy secondary. So these are all the killie secondaries.
So putting it into perspective, if five is kind of like the minimum that you need to get to a 50% win ratio, anything above a five we will consider as a very good secondary. Anything around the seven mark, the 7.5 mark, is what we'll probably consider an S tier secondary. Anything around the five, I'd probably predict to be maybe a B tier secondary, like it's good, but you've got to make sure you get it. And anything between that, I'd probably say is an A tier. Everything else below, we can just say F tier, probably avoid them unless you can specifically
F-tier.
get them. Because, like, if you're not going to get to 50-50 ratio, what's the point in
What's the
taking
point?
any? Exactly, right?
If you're not going to get to 50-50 ratio, you might as well ask your opponent, can we flip a coin to see who wins?
You got a better chance.
You actually have a better chance.
Okay. So purge the enemy, all right? Now, interesting kicking off. Assassinate is about just above five. What do you think about that, Liam?
Well, I mean, the weird thing about a lot of the secondary choices, particularly mainly in this category, is that you make these choices based on what your opponent has in their army. So that actually does surprise me because, for example, I would not take Assassinate against someone who only has a couple of characters. I'd take Assassinate against something with like 10 characters or something silly where you're going to be picking up some extraneous character points here and there. Armies, sort of like a lot of the demon lists at the moment with Disco Lords and Keepers of Secrets. A lot of the Death Guard armies have loads of extraneous characters. But if you're only on average scoring 6, and more importantly, at the top standard deviation, so when we post these are like box of whisker plots. So at the top of that standard deviation, you've got what, 11
Yeah, around
at the
11.
top there. So if you're scoring way above average, you're at 11 points.
And that's
The data doesn't even
unlikely.
account for people approaching 15.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's really unlikely. So this is actually really telling, because if you've picked Assassinate, you've picked it because you think you can do it, and the data shows that you thought wrong. Like,
It,
you
yeah, it
know what
should
I mean? Like,
so to me it says like, all right, they've got five characters, I'll pick assassinate. That means like on average you'll kill probably two, and then most of the time at the upper end you'll kill three. Oh, sorry, it'd be
you're
four,
almost
three
never
or
going to kill
four.
five.
Yeah, exactly. So
Wow.
interesting. It's a bit of a bait, a bit of a bait. Now the S tiers that I think are probably the most interesting here, which are ranging around the 7.5. 6 to 7.5 points on average is Bring It Down, Titan Hunter, which Liam will had a really good insight on this before. He'll get to that, and a Space Wolf one, interesting, which is Glory Kills. Now, just keep in mind, a few of these when we release them will have asterisks, and that is for sample size below 300 games played. But I'll just double check that real quick for how many Glory Kills has.
That's okay.
Yeah,
So, I
it only
mean,
has like 30 games, so it's not that trustworthy, that one. So Bring
yeah,
It
for
Down and
sure.
Titan Hunter are the key ones in this category.
I think both of those though, Bring It Down and Titan Hunter, I suppose reserve judgment in calling them S tier yet. There's some, especially later on, that I can firmly say, yes, that makes perfect sense. And the reason that I would apply caution to both of those is that Bring It Down was quite significantly nerfed in the latest the GT Mission Pack FAQ, where vehicles went, from 3 to 2 points or 2 to 1 points. And I don't think that this data is entirely from the new FAQ.
You would be right. Yep, that's right.
And so because of that, I would, for example, in the old rules, so to speak, if your opponent had 5 vehicles above 10 wounds, then you could get 15 points from those 5 vehicles alone, which meant that, like AdMech players with 5 of those little vehicles or lots of different examples meant that they'd give up 15 very easily. And I think that's why it's scoring so highly. And now with the FAQ change, it's scoring much worse. In addition to that sort of like logic error, Bring It Down is really only taken. It's one of the secondaries again that you only take if you really think you can do it, which is vehicle heavy or monster heavy armies. So, in terms of just like generically picking Bring It Down, obviously you're not going to pick it if your opponent has no vehicles. But even if your opponent does have enough vehicles for you to score high on it, just bear in mind that the average here is only 7.5. And I think a lot of people, I'm guilty of this too. When I see a full vehicle army, I say, hey, I'm going to go for like the 15 here. But it's statistically very unlikely for you to do. I mean, the average is still only, it looks like a little bit less than 7.5 by the looks of it, Luke. Now, Titan Hunter, I think the data here is totally fair. Titan Hunter averages 7.5, with a really high sort of upper echelon of scores there, approaching 15. It looks like, maybe 14-ish on this chart. And that totally makes sense because 100% of the games that people have picked Titan Hunter is going to be against Imperial Knights, essentially, with some very niche exceptions. It's going to be Imperial or Chaos Knights. You're going to pick Titan Hunter. And when you do pick it, it's because your opponent has almost an excess of models you can farm Titan Hunter from. So if you are going to take it, odds are you're going to score well for it. And that is kind of reflected in the fact that the average is the best in this entire category. It's got the highest average score of all of the secondaries in the Purge the Enemy category, and that's including the Codex specific ones as well, which is really telling. And also the highest, one standard deviation above. So if your opponent, if you're playing Knights, if somebody can give up Titan Slayer, you should not really be considering any other alternative. Like statistically, you should be taking this. Even if you only kill one or two knights, you actually still get 10 points for that.
Yeah, so, that's actually really interesting, just killing two knights. Because even myself, when I come up against knights and I see like one, I'm like, nah, it's not worth it. Or two, I'm like, you're not maxing the points, you know? But apparently the stats say it's probably better to do that because it's going to give you 10 points.
Exactly. And also, I'm just going to double check it now because I've actually only taken it a very small amount of times. But I'm pretty sure with Titan Slayer, it goes 10 points, 13 points, 15 points. So even if you only kill one super heavy, you still get quite a few points. I'll just double check that now.
Interesting. Well, while you check that, I'll quickly say...
I'm right. Yeah, it's 10, 12, 15.
Oh, so excellent. That's insane. So funnily enough, this one, it's dead on. It's basically, what's the point, actually? It's 7.81 on average, which to me says that if you're versing knights, right, it's either you stomp them and you get the max points, or they stomp you and you don't get any points, kind of thing. It's almost like a critical threshold, bang in the middle, what's going to happen? Of course, there's cases in between, like fire and few between, but that's just funny. Funny to think of it that way.
Now, I'm curious, Luke, and I'm sorry to put you on the spot, but I want to ask you about the number of sample size for Cut Off the Head. I want to know how many people have picked Cut Off the
Head. How many people are bold people? 1,432. So 1,432.
Okay, 1,432 people have made brave choices, and I appreciate every single one of you. So just to sort of put it in perspective, Cut Off the Head, a notoriously difficult to do secondary that is very not rewarding in many cases, seems to have an average of a bit less than four, with, you know, the lower end obviously being zero. And even one, if you're scoring in the higher upper echelon of all points, you're getting 7.5-ish.
Yep.
So statistically, it's a very bad secondary. And I think that's fair. That is a bad secondary.
Yeah,
it is hard. It is hard to do, and it does not reward you. The rest of the codex specific ones are sort of, you know, what you'd expect.
Yeah, we won't talk about them in super detail because they're not quite high enough sample size. But they're going to be included in the graphs for you guys to look at and make your own.
Yeah, for sure. On.
But I will say for those 1,400 people that took Cut Off the Head, thank you for giving us stats to confirm that secondary is poo. Thank you. shall we move on to, I think Shadow Ops is next, is that right?
Yeah, we'll do Shadow Ops because rather than sort of talk about the next semi-killy category, it'd be good to talk about something a bit different.
Okay.
Now, I think it's been a very rare game of 40K that I've personally played where somebody hasn't taken one of these secondaries. Like, I think that somebody almost always takes one of these.
Yeah. I mean, it's basically part of the primary... so why not?
Yeah, exactly. And one thing that's interesting about a lot of these action-specific ones is that the one that I see taken very often for the study there is obviously deploy scramblers. Mm-hmm. Now, the tough part about deploy scramblers, when we chat about that, is that it obviously will score you 10 points or 0 points. So the data here, I'm actually not really sure what it sort of tells you about scramblers, because the average points is 5, which means that, like, on average, scramblers is a coin flip. It's either going to give you 10 points or it's going to give you 0 points. It's not like, so I don't know how I rate scramblers,
so,
to be honest.
Ready for this, Liam? 23,000 people have played with scramblers.
Yeah, and that does not surprise me at all. Yep. Sorry, while you're there, how many people pick raised banners?
Banners, 17,000.
Yeah, so in 40,000, so approaching like 80% of your sample size, somebody has taken one or the other of those two.
Yep.
And I believe that. Mm-hmm. So looking at these, I will. There's not many in this category, so they're kind of predictably what you'd expect. Investigate sites is the worst, with an average of less than four, with teleporter homers coming very close behind, with an average of about four. You then go up to banners, which has an average of slightly less than five, and then scramblers, which has an average of five. But what's interesting is the range of available scores, one standard deviation above and below, for Bannerinos, as it's lovingly called, is like a bit smaller than scramblers, because it's kind of, it's interesting, right? You're never gonna get, or sorry, you're not never. It's a very bad day when you get 0 points for raised banners. It's a very bad day if you get 0 points. And this data kind of shows that. It's extremely unlikely for you to get below one. I mean, Luke, the rest of the actions are kind of faction-specific ones. And I'm kind of going to hand over to you for the next one, I guess, because that Death Guard one really surprises me. What do you think about that?
I mean, I definitely think the faction-specific board control ones are always, they're always so strong. Because they're kind of like doing already what you want to be doing. So Death Guard spread the sickness is, I think, what is it? It's average of 6.8. And
Wow.
Necron's Ancient Machineries is the next one at 5.8. So I would say that the spread the sickness is a very good secondary for Death Guard players to take. Because even the lower sort of band of this is around like 4 points. So at the lower end, and you know, at the bottom 10% of this, most people are scoring 4 points at minimum, which is pretty, like, that's
Yeah.
pretty amazing. At the upper end, they're scoring like 11 points. So it's a
And
very good secondary.
oh, for sure. And I think the what's very reflective in these results is that in Spread the Sickness, the lower echelon of results there is still, like 3.5 to 4, which makes sense because that secondary is 3 points per objective marker you do an action on. So, even if you start on one objective, that's 3 points. Like, there's no way your opponent can stop you getting 3 points, essentially.
Yeah, and you basically start on one at the start of the game, so
Yeah.
yeah.
So that's kind of shadow ups. All in all, I don't think any, interestingly, even though these secondaries make up a huge percentage of games played, almost none of these fulfill that requirement, in inverted commas, of being S tier. Like, none of these on average score you 7.5 or more points.
Definitely the spread the sickness, and I'd even honestly put in Ancient Machineries are probably in the A-ish tier. They're still very, very
Yeah.
exceptional secondaries that are reliable. But yeah,
I think so. That's
nothing
fair.
like super overpowered. Anything at 7.5 and above, like on average, I would put in like the overpowered sort of S tier sort of bracket.
Yep, that's fair. So working our way down, we now have Warpcraft. Do you want to take us away there?
Yeah, okay. So this tree actually, it says a lot to me. The only good one in Warpcraft reaching the sort of almost S tier level is Abhor the Witch, which funnily enough is against Psykers. So I'm sure it comes to no surprise. Now this also includes data that was before the change. So before Abhor the Witch or was 3 points for any Psyker squad and 5 for a character or which has now
Yeah.
been changed to 2 and 3, which is much more reasonable. So it might drop after, you know, changing sort of data sets there, but still it's at 7.1 points on average with the upper band sort of towards the 14 mark, 13, 14, and lower band basically at 2 points. Which means obviously if you're taking a Abhor the Witch, you're versing a heavy Psyker army, and you're probably going to kill one unit at least, which will give you that minimum points, which is what that says to me there.
Yeah, and obviously there are quite a few armies in 40K that have a single psyker, but then when you get to the psychic heavy armies, you're having oodles of them. So for people who take Abhor the Witch, you're doing it in a surplus. Like, you have a surplus of available points, I suppose, you can score. And that is reflective here. So of all of these, the irony is in the Warpcraft category, you're better off just trying to kill the psychers than make friends with them. Like
So to
that's
put
kind of what the data shows.
yeah, put it in perspective, mental interrogate, both or well, mental interrogate, psychic ritual, and pierce the veil are all around the 4 points on average mark, with spreads, you know, relatively the same. A little bit different for mental interrogation, but look, they're all pretty garbage. Let's just put it that way.
I mean, what's really telling about those is not just the low average score, it's the fact that one standard deviation or less lower than average is zero.
So a lot
So
of the
that
time,
means,
you'll get like it's
exactly.
possible,
So that
yeah.
means even if you do slightly below average for some of these, you're getting zero. And what I find really interesting, again, the one here that's worth talking about a bit more is psychic ritual, because that's one where you either get zero or you get 15. There's no middle ground, there's no half measures. So if the average for a secondary that scores you 15 if you're succeeding, if the average is four, then you are literally picking a secondary. Statistically, you have less than a third chance of doing it. You're picking a one in three gamble to get any points at all, which is a I did that twice at the tournament on the weekend. I actually successfully did Psychic Ritual.
No way. You're padding
But
the
so
stats,
I'm
man.
now
You're padding the
exactly
stats.
now that I'm looking at it, I'm realizing that I made a terrible life decision.
Yeah. So that means like almost 80% of the games that Psycho Ritual's picked, it's people not getting the points.
Which is, think very carefully about your life choices
Which means that
in
in
Psychic Ritual.
each of your other two secondaries, guys, that will mean that you will need at least 10 points from each of those to carry the weight. To just to get the 50% mark. So that's pretty
Which
heavy.
on average is only one secondary in this entire data set.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah, so interesting
oh
there.
boy. What's the next category, Luke?
What's next in the book? I don't actually have the book.
So we've definitely gone out of order for the
Yeah.
book, but
Okay.
that is totally okay. The next on this doco is the No Mercy, No Respite category,
Okay.
which has like the o like not the majority of, but it has a lot of faction specific ones in it. Not as many as Battlefield Supremacy, but quite a few.
So yeah, I included this for people's interest. However, the faction-specific ones are typically not that heavily used unless they're super overpowered, and that definitely shines through
Such
in
as
two in particular actually, which is Oaths of Moment and a Space Wolves one called Warrior Pride. So Oaths of Moment, which I'm sure everybody would be aware, is a very, very strong secondary. Just to clarify for people who need a memory refresher. It's 2 points if you hold the middle, 1 point if you didn't hold the if you didn't fall back or fail morale. And is it what's the last one, Liam? Do you remember?
kill a character, or monster or vehicle or something like
That's right.
that.
Yeah. So on average, this one scores 8.53, with the lower echelon being around 5 points and the upper being around 13 points. So
So very firmly S tier.
this is probably the Hang on, let me quickly look before I say it's definitely one of the top performing secondaries out of all secondaries possible. Put it that
Yeah.
way.
So in this data set, in this graph, there is one secondary that outperforms it, but it's a very, very new secondary from the Dark Angel Codex. And I presume the sample size for that is extremely small. So it's difficult to know for certain. And having read that secondary, I would be personally shocked if long term that turns out to be worse, or sorry, better rather, than Oaths of the Moment.
For sure. So just to put it into perspective, it is an extremely low sample size. It's only 20 games played with that one.
So, and does it tell you there how many of those are practice games versus tournament games?
No, it doesn't, unfortunately.
That's okay. So, I mean, look, at end of the day, the secondary we're talking about here is the Dark Angel one, Death on the Wind. Now, for those of you who don't know what Death on the Wind does, neither do I. So, I am currently
Oh,
reading it.
I looked at. Oh, do you know it? Have you got it?
I am struggling to find it. Please save me.
Okay, I think it's. I looked it up before. It's any time you advance a Ravenwing model advances and kills something, And then on top of that, it's if you charge and kill something. So I'm going to quickly get it back up just in case I've butchered it, but I'm pretty sure, if memory serves correct. Okay, here it is here. So score 2 victory points each time an enemy unit is destroyed by an attack made by a Ravenwing model from your army that moved 12 inches or more during the movement phase that turn, or made a charge move that turn.
Whoa.
So you move more than 12 and kill something, or you charge and kill something.
Okay, I might actually revise my assessment. That is a silly secondary.
It's actually super easy, right? Like,
The problem with this is that it looks really, really. Actually, I sorry, I know, I actually revert to my original standing. This looks really, really good on paper, right? And especially with a lot of the Dark Angel lists revolving around Talon Masters, which are Ravenwing, this looks really, really awesome. But you're not going to want to shoot a Talon Master into like two Gretchen. You know what I'm saying? You kind of want to shoot the Talon Masters into their big damage dealing things because you actually need to make the most out of all of the Talon Master's shots. And more importantly, the Dark Angel army works by having their part of the table and defending their part of the table. Very rarely you're going to have Deathwing Knights in your opponent's deployment zone. So there's going to be lots of little units that have one or two models that survive and end up hiding. I think this might actually be a little bit harder than it initially appears to do, unless you're playing a full like Ravenwing biker army that like runs essentially across the table. Now the interesting thing here is that it's competing in a category with Oaths of the Moment. So it's kind of hard, right? There are other Dark Angel secondaries that more reliably score you points, and you could take Oaths and them, depending on the tournament rule set you're using. Most of the world seems to agree you can take both. And that's probably why Death on the Wind might not get as much love long term. But statistically, based on the very small sample size of 20, the smallest sample size, I would argue, and I'm pulling out of my butt here, but is it the lowest sample size out of all of them?
Out of all on this category, it might be. I think so. Out of all total data sets, no.
Okay, I'm curious, and let me know at the end what the lowest is. That's actually funny.
There
But
was
anyway,
some I didn't even include. It was, I'm pretty sure it was a Blood Angels one. It was picked like 2 times and scored 0 points total. I was like,
that's incredible. I love
okay.
that. So look, for the people who've played Death on the Wind, the average is like 12, which would make it the best secondary in 40K. But again, extremely low sample size. Treat with caution. In terms of the other ones in this category, like obviously we had a bit of a chat about excuse me, my brain stopped working. The ones like Oaths of the Moment and Warrior Pride and Death on the Wind. There are a few other here that are interesting. Now, there's one that I see picked in the alarming majority of the games of 40K that I play, and that's While We Stand. Luke, how many of the roughly 50,000 games here picked While We Stand?
That would be 1 second. Four, almost 15,000.
Yeah. So
So nearly half.
exactly. That is a very high number of games, and it sort of reflects in that reflects in my experience, but also in the data as well. So the average for While We Stand is 5, which is makes
Pretty.
it like okay,
Yeah. But it's pretty
but not
bad.
great.
Yeah, it's pretty bad if,
Yeah.
like, literally half the games you're running it, and people on average are getting 5 points. That means you're losing two of your expensive units and losing a third of the points that you could potentially score.
Yeah. And based on the standard deviation here as well, you're extraordinarily unlikely to get 15.
You know,
Like,
so with that standard deviation, Liam, it's more likely that you will lose all of your while we stands, then keep them all.
yep. And that is really kind of disturbing in some respects, because I see a lot of lists built around the sort of While We Stand play. And it sort of makes me think, is that the safer way to go? Because grind them down a secondary that is essentially not built on keeping your models alive at all scores you about the same points, and I would argue is less risky. You can still always get some points for grinding them down turn 5, but While We Stand, you could theoretically lose them all in a turn.
And
Makes you think, actually.
it does, because while we, when you take While We Stand, sometimes it will make you make decisions that you otherwise wouldn't make, because you might have a big haymaker unit and be like, oh, okay, I won't throw it here because I might actually lose them in return. Whereas if you're doing something like Grind Them Down or another secondary, you can sort of almost throw away that unit if needed to score secondary, to score secondary points.
100%.
So I find
The
that in
rest of the.
particular,
Sorry.
oh sorry, real quick. I find that in particular with Grey Knights, for example. Like my army needs to deal damage, but my While We Stands are also kind of fragile if things go poorly. And normally it's like a Terminator brick or a Paladin brick or something. And if you take them While We Stand, I'm definitely more cautious with them than I would be if I take Grind Them Down. And I've actually been taking Grind Them Down more often because I find that it allows me to play more aggressively sometimes. And I actually score more points because it's actually quite easy to get Grind Them Down sometimes.
Yeah, for sure. That's it. That's interesting. I'm surprised by that, but at the same time, I mean, it often goes poorly for people, so that makes sense. The
Yeah.
next category, which I think I like, sort of, is the most important to talk about, because in terms of a category, I can't actually remember a game of 40K where somebody didn't pick a secondary from this category ever. Somebody always picks something from this category. I don't think it's ever excluded. I'm not sure if you have the numbers on that, Luke, but this category in general, if you added up engage, linebreaker, domination, I think if you added up all of these secondaries, it would be 100% of games, or very, very close to.
So what is it? It's. I'll quickly do the math, like a rough
That is
estimate.
totally, yeah, totally, man. So. In terms of average scores, like across the board, this category for secondaries scores very well.
It's picked in
What's
about
interesting, though.
60 to 65% of the time.
Oh, really? Okay, that is much lower than I thought, and I am happy to be proven wrong. But like honestly, Battlefield Supremacy, if you look at the average scores sort of across this entire category, that's both the chapter approved ones, and the codex specific ones, they all score pretty much the same, to be honest. They all get you, from the top, the best in this category, which is the Blood Angel Relentless Assault, which gets you 7.5 roughly, to the very, very, very worst in this category, which is Death Watch, the Long Vigil, which gets you a bit above 5. They're very, very consistent. What's interesting about the consistencies, that's not just average scores, that's in the standard deviations as well. Like, very few of these have a standard deviation that's zero, and very few of these, none of these, have a standard deviation at 15. Most of these are, to be honest, most of these, though, are above 10, which tells you straight off the bat that I think all of these, by and large, are good secondary choices with some really big standouts. What's the one that stands out the most to you, Luke?
Well, actually, funnily enough to me, well, it's the Blood Angel one, Relentless Assault, and also the two Necron ones. So the Blood Angels one,
Absolutely.
I think, if you want to correct me, Liam, it's the one where you got to be in their deployment zone.
Yeah, so it's honestly one of the most infuriatingly dumb secondaries I've ever read in my life. Because you get 4 points at the end of your turn if you have more units in your opponent's deployment zone than they have in yours. A couple of things about this secondary. It's not wholly within, so you can just have one model's toe touching the deployment zone and you get the points. And secondly, what the hell are you doing in the Blood Angel's deployment zone? Like, if your opponent has models in your deployment zone, it's because you're playing a Blood Angel mirror match. Like, something has gone horribly wrong.
So
Like,
how many points do you get? Is it four?
four per
So
turn.
look at if you look at the standard deviation, the lower, like if you're in the tenth lowest 10th percentile, you're getting 4 points at minimum. On
And
average, it
little,
scored two
yeah,
times. Like that's
so
insane.
silly. Yeah, exactly. And to be honest, the times I've played against this, it's so oppressive because it's a secondary that rewards you for doing what Blood Angels want to do anyway, and what Space Marines have a lot of tech to make them do. Even if you push back the Sanguard and the Death Company and the Vanguard vets and the characters, You can then just guerrilla tactics a stratagem to move a unit of infiltrators or incursors just in their deployment zone. And unless you've got an equal number of models in your opponent's deployment zone, it doesn't matter. So it's actually a very, very good secondary, and that is reflected by the results here. And the Necron ones are very slightly behind. Interestingly, the one that I want to talk about, which is not actually my favorite of the two, is Treasure of Aeons. So the Treasure of Aeons one is kind of a scaling, a board control secondary where you get points for holding objectives outside of either player's deployment zone. Now, this secondary on average gets you pretty much 7.5, bang on, but its range is pretty small. Like the lower end of the range in terms of the centiles is like 3.5, and the top is 12.5, I want to say. A much smaller range than the Blood Angel Relentless Assault, which kind of interests me a little bit because that secondary I think is a bit harder to do than Purge the Vermin, which statistically here on average gives you the same number of points, 7.5. That sort of suggests already that all of these secondaries in the Codex specific board control secondaries are incredible. They're scoring so many points for people.
Yeah, I mean, if you just look at all of them at a blanket level, pretty much like the lowest one of them is a 6. Sorry, 5.5. There you go. So at lowest out of these objectives, the lowest on average you'll score is 5.5, and that's on a, you know, that's on a Death Watch one, which is not got a high sample size. The next like most reliable one is 6, which is almost in our S tier. That's like the A tier level. So whenever you don't know an objective to pick, you're stuck on one. Pick one of the pick engage or domination. Just pick one at random. You'll probably get 5 or 6 points.
Exactly. And that does make sense, right? Because if you pick domination, and even if you just do it for 2 turns,
You get
that's 6 points.
Yeah.
Points. If you do it for if you do it for 3 turns, you're scoring the amount you need for that secondary to make your win likely. So you just have to do it for a little bit more than half the game. Which is not hugely unreasonable for a lot of different armies.
No, it's
What
not.
I like about this, and I think this is I think this is fair, is that the Dark Angel secondary, Stubborn Defiance, which has been talked about quite a lot, and this is the one where at the start of the game, you pick an objective and you get scaling points for every battle round that you hold that objective to the end of the game. And if you essentially hold the one objective for all 5 turns, you get 15 points. Now, this secondary has a very small sample size as well. That's one of the ones that are you've asterisked Luke. How many games do we have on record of people picking Stubborn Defiance?
65.
Yeah. But in those 65 games, it scored pretty much the same on average as Purge the Vermin and Treasure of Aeons. Slightly below if my eyes aren't deceiving me. So it's sort of like 7 to 7.5, which suggests that on average it's a very, very good secondary. But it has a huge range, which I think is more indicative of the small sample size than anything else.
Definitely, yep.
Yep, that's kind of all I take away from here. Battlefield Supremacy in general is a good category to be picking secondaries from. On average, I think it has the best results.
I think, yeah, definitely. If you're struggling for a secondary to pick, and I know sometimes I am too, definitely either engage or domination. If you're not, obviously, if you're Necrons, you know which one of those you're going to pick already. Or Blood Angels, you know what you're picking. But yeah, so this is just old reliable. We'll call this one old reliable.
And the very last category, category 6, is the mission-specific secondaries.
Yeah.
Ye olde auto-pick or auto-ignore. You know, like,
And
I
honestly,
mean, ugh.
the data reflects that perfectly, doesn't it?
It really, really does.
Yeah.
Like, I mean,
So,
there are two. Sorry, you take it away.
okay. So there's two I think that everyone's very familiar with, which is priority targets, direct assault. Priority targets on average is getting 8.75 points. And
Super S tier.
this is common. Like this is picked 5,000, almost 6,000 times, right? And it's reliably getting 8.75 points. And at lowest, it's getting around 5 points. So this auto checks that, all right, this secondary will automatically put me in the 50% win condition. Not by itself, but I just mean it's one of the secondaries that if you're looking to get 5 points for each secondary,
Yeah.
it'll automatically give you that 5 points. The upper band, the top end, is at about 13. So it's reliably giving
Oh.
you in that range, which is just exceptional. Next one, Direct Assault, which is the mission where, so priority targets is you hold, you pick a target, you basically sit on it, and you get points. I think it's 3 points per turn or something ridiculous.
Yeah, and
You
you
just pick your
can
home
pick
field.
the objective marker in your deployment zone. So you just sit on your home field for 5 turns and get 15, which is pretty ridiculous. The thing about this secondary that is interesting, and I've had a chat with people about it too, is that it's such an auto take that in 100% of the games that I've played this mission, my opponent has also picked it, which then is interesting because it's essentially negating each other. You know what I mean? Like you're essentially canceling each other out. If you're both going to get a very high scoring secondary from the same secondary, you kind of it makes your other two choices way more important. Just something to think
Definitely.
about. Like
Good. Good observation.
the direct assault one is the for mission 32's sweeping clear. It's score 3 points if at the end of the turn you hold the central objective. So on average, this is about six. Which actually is a bit lower than I thought it would be. I actually thought it would be up there with priority targets. But I'm wrong. Do you have any thoughts about why I guess that might be, Luke? Because I mean, I feel like if you're going to pick direct assault, you're kind of just going to flood the center of the table and try and get the big points for it. I don't know.
Yeah, I think, but typically I would say that your opponent probably is as well. So you're both doing the same thing. So you're going to meet in the middle, and then whoever wins is going to score slightly higher on that one. I don't know. That's kind of where I'm.
That's fair.
So that's why, I don't know. It's kind of spot on in the middle of the. It probably sits perfectly for that sort of situation to occur because if you do it and you just overwhelm them, you'll get the 15. If they overwhelm you, you'll get zero. If you're in the middle but one person dominates, you're going to get around probably 6 or 7 points, and that's exactly where it sits. So, direct
That's
assault,
fair.
it's good, but just make sure you can beat your opponent, I guess.
Yep.
The other ones, not so. I mean, all of them kind of just taper off. Surround them, raise, data intercept, strategic scan. Vital ground, all below five, and standard deviation is quite close to zero. So it's either you get not very good points or none at all. So I'd probably advise staying away from those. Minimize losses, Liam. I'm a bit intrigued on this one because I think the meta here in Brisbane, particularly, is if you get that mission with minimize losses, you take minimize losses. While we stand and banners, and you just do your three objectives, don't even
Yep.
go to your opponent. Whoever gets second turn wins, right?
I have played that game before. That is pretty much what I would do. But the data suggests that it doesn't score very well.
No, it's interesting because I think for people who haven't had the conversation about that mission. You kind of just play it like any other mission, and if you've got killie secondaries on your opponent, you're like, yeah, I can get grind them down, or I can get, bring it down, or Titan Slayer, I'm going to pick them and try and kill them. And then inadvertently, if your opponent picks minimize losses while we stand and banners, it's kind of just they automatically win because they don't have to fight you, you have to kill them, and you have to overextend,
Now,
whereas they're already on the objectives that they need to have to win.
yeah,
So
exactly.
it's a really weird
And
dynamic, that mission.
this is that mission in general, I think, gets the award for being the most boring game of 40K you can possibly play. And yet this is really reflected in it, my master's game against Matt Morazzoli when we played on stream in Adelaide, because we both picked exactly the same secondaries. I lost the roll-off slash won the roll-off, depending on your perspective. And so at the start of the game, we're like, I think you're going to win by 5 points. And I ended up winning by like six because something else happened. But it's just that frustrating notion of he's going to get 40 for primary. I'm going to get 45 because I go second and I'm going to rush an objective last turn. We're going to get the same for banners, the same for while we stand, and the same for minimized losses. It's just like, that is so boring. It's like the most dull game ever. But I will try and make this moderately exciting. Luke, of all of the secondaries that have statistically significant sample sizes, I would like to present the wooden spoon to mission secondary raise objectives, which wins the award for being the most completely and utterly useless secondary you could possibly pick. And how many people have selected that objective because they also deserve a soft golf clap?
Let me have a look. It is 1,200 people.
1,200 people. So less than the brave people who took that other secondary. But look, Raise is an exercise in creative rules writing by Games Workshop, in that it's basically a secondary that reads, it's scored at the end of the battle, and you get 6 points if you did a raise action, which is one of those silly ones where you have to start it in your turn, but it's completed in the next command phase, which is very, 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 very silly. Even worse, you have to start the action at the start of your movement phase, so you have to be on the objective at the start of your turn and survive until the next turn. So it's basically two straight turns of controlling an objective in your opponent's deployment zone. Now, there's only two of these objectives. If you do it once, you get 6 points. If you do it twice, you get 12 points. So just to be clear, if you're along your entire opponent's deployment zone, you've tabled them. They have no models left. The best you can do is 12 points. You cannot even score 15 for this secondary. And it requires you to commit your entire army to your opponent's deployment zone.
Yeah, it's basically like
Yeah.
if you're tabling your opponent, you can take this one. If not, don't take this one.
It's incredible. I actually could not think of a more challenging secondary to do unless your opponent forgot to bring their models. Yeah, I don't know. And I think that's reflected in the data here. It's got the lowest on average score, and it's got very, very little range in the good end.
And a lot in the bad
And
end.
I mean, it goes to zero, right? Like, I mean, if you are one standard deviation above, you are only just above 5 points on average, which is the six, basically like the 6 points you get from doing it once. So it's almost like statistically, no one is doing it twice. You know what I mean? Like, it's happening once. Oh dear,
Yeah,
very
it's a
silly
rough.
secondaries.
So, look, we've gone through all the secondaries. What do you think are clear winners, Liam? What do you think are the clear winners that
So
you should take?
the clear winners for me are, I guess they kind of fall into two categories. And I'm not just talking about the category secondary, I mean like overall headings. And heading one would be sort of like the auto take codex specific ones, and then the auto take not codex specific ones. So, you know, if you're playing something like Necrons or Dark Angels, you should be taking one of your Battlefield Supremacy secondaries. And this data basically tells you that if you're not taking one of those, you are silly. Think more about your choices. But no, seriously, like, I mean, not just the Dark Angel one, but the Necron ones, Purge the Vermin and Treasure the Aeons, are 7.5 to 8-ish on average, which suggests firmly that they are incredibly good secondaries. But also, if you don't have a Codex specific secondary that you want to do, even something like Engage on All Fronts is scoring pretty well in comparison to the Codex specific ones. I mean, it's like 6.5-ish on average, which is pretty good. So that's kind of my thoughts here. I think people should 100%. The number you said before about the number of people who are not picking Battlefield Supremacy, that surprised me a lot. I think that this data shows that Battlefield Supremacy is an incredible category of secondary choices, and people should be considering them very, very frequently. That's kind of like my first set of thoughts. That the second heading is secondaries that I consider to be very reliably good scoring secondaries that actually aren't, that I'm genuinely like surprised by, and those are ones like Raise Banners and Scramblers. I see one of those two picked in almost all games that I play, and both of them are on average 5 points or less, which firmly suggests that they are actually not. This whole Shadow Ops category is not a great secondary category. You are probably better off picking other categories.
Yeah, that's definitely so. For me, the biggest shock for me was the banners and scramblers, exactly like you, because I would commonly take banners. I sort of leaned away from scramblers because I was like, oh, you know, it's only 10 points, means you have to do well in your other secondaries. But at the same time, 10 points, as we discovered, is actually quite critical for a secondary to perform. But at the same time, banners is something you can do and sort of walk away if you've sort of got other stuff you can, you know, do with your units. But at the same time, like banners and scramblers, just giving you 5 points, that's just going to get you 50%. It's not going to get you you know, a big win, or at least make the win
Exactly.
easier. It's going to put you
It
in halfway contention for it.
interestingly, I mean, and this is something that like I'm looking at, on average, you are probably more worth your time taking something like assassinate. Let's say even if your opponent has like four characters, you are probably more worth your time to take assassinate than banners.
Yeah.
Based on this data, and I'm actually now genuinely not thinking this is a statistical aberration. I'm actually thinking maybe this is right, because I mean, I'm thinking about the last couple of games that I've played where I've picked banners and I've got, you know, games that I've won and games that I've lost. Games that I've lost, you know, I've gotten about 4, 5, 6, 4. Games that I've won, I've gotten about 8, 9, 10, 4. But then in those same games, my opponent has committed models and characters, and I've probably killed like three or four characters just by playing the game. Like I haven't been deliberately hunting them, just by me playing the game. And you know what? That would get me the same number of points.
And probably make your game easier because you're not spending a turn doing an action. Instead, you're killing a model that would otherwise kill you.
And I'm not losing as many points by my opponent being aggressive. You know what I
Yeah.
mean? Like it's if I, that's something definitely worth considering, and that's even more relevant if you have, you know, for example, for the Death Guard players, in this entire category, Spread the Sickness wins notably. Like it is a head and shoulders above the rest. So if you are comfortable as a Death Guard player, and this is probably something to take away as well. If you are comfortable as a Death Guard player doing one of the non-Codex Battlefield Supremacy ones, like Engage or Linebreaker or Domination, consider taking Spread the Sickness, because the difference between Despoiled Ground and Engage are statistically negligible. You're at, like on average, you're not actually getting much benefit. And I know from my experience with local Death Guard players, Wayne had to get a mention in this podcast. I'm sorry, Wayne. I'm shoehorning him in. It's 86 for 86.
This was natural. It was natural, man. It just
This was
flew out.
exactly. But you know, a lot of Death Guard players do pick Despoiled Ground all the time because it's reliably going to get you a bunch of points. But statistically, it scores you the same as Engage. It just does. Like that's it.
Yeah, it's
I
super
don't know.
interesting. And I think even like in some cases you might find that it might engage might be better because you're not having to commit very killer units to certain parts of the board, right?
Absolutely.
And Despoiled Ground is like a, I think it's bubonic Astartes you need, right?
Yeah, so it doesn't always. For Despoiled Ground is interesting because it's a lot like Oath of the Moment, and there's like a number of subcategories of things
Oh,
you have
okay.
to do. But Despoiled Ground is kind of like it gets you a bunch of points if you've achieved a number of them, but it's actually relatively easy to get zero for it as well. Like, if a number of things go wrong, you're not on more than half of the objectives, you're not in all four quarters at the end of the game, and you don't have contagion range to like four objectives or something like that at the end of the game, then you get zero. So it's actually, even though it looks like there's a lot of categories, they all kind of involve you pushing your opponent into the dirt, like reasonably severely.
Yeah, it's one of those win condition ones. To be honest, like engage looks like just a better option. You do half the same things, but your minimum points is 3 versus 0.
Yep. And I think there's something to be said for these secondaries that even if you're getting tabled, you will score points early on. Something like Engage, you can score with like three models. If you have three characters alive turn 5, you can still get 2 points that turn. Like what would have been it? Sorry, my brain has totally gone off on a tangent, Luke. I think this secondary list very accurately reflects secondary scored in your turn versus at the start of your turn. Like, for example, things like Engaged and Domination and Linebreaker score quite well, whereas the action secondaries, which are typically scored in the next turn, are all scored poorly. And I think that is a very good indicator of just how hard that rule set sort of is, because GW loves doing that at the moment, having sort of those ones where you score it at the start of your next turn. They are almost universally bad.
Yeah, that's a good observation. Because, I mean, I guess the ones where you just do your own thing, you don't require an opponent. Whereas the ones where you have to, like, do something and hold till the next turn, your opponent can interfere with you. I mean, it's an obvious observation, but I mean, it's definitely probably one of the main contributing factors.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, if you're a new player coming to the tournament scene, or you just want to play some practice games with your friends, this data is actually, even though statistics is personally not my jam, this data is really interesting to sort of suggest to you things that might be auto picks might not be, and secondaries that might score. Yeah, you might go, oh, I'm never going to get 15 for that, but that's not what you should be taking away. You should have a very clear goal of getting 7.5 or more from your secondaries to sort of reach that win condition of trying to get 70 plus points. If you, for example, scored 10 points from all of your secondaries, so 30 points there, and you got 40 for primary, which is actually not ridiculous. That's just holding, in a lot of missions, that's just holding two objectives of the whole game. Even if your opponent's getting 15, so you're doing that. You're still scoring 80 points if you include the battle ready bonus. And if you're scoring 80 points, your percentage to win is approaching 80%. So I think focusing on that consistency across your secondaries is a really big takeaway for me. And looking at this, I'll probably never take scramblers again. I'm going to be honest. I'm probably never going to take scramblers.
Yeah, me too. I'm sitting here thinking, oh, I need to rethink this.
Yeah, man, I'll be honest. I'm actually looking now at thinking about if I can do one of the Purge the Enemy ones. Because I almost always take banners, right? Like, I always take banners. Yeah. And now I'm looking at them, and it's like, on average, you know, it's just not that great.
Yeah, I'm actually really liking Grind Them Down. I think that's interesting. Rather than While We Stand. Mm. But, well, yet to be considered.
While Luke and I spend the rest of our natural lives building better and more statistically and evidence-based 40k armies, I think we might call that an evening, Luke. What do you think?
Sounds good. I'll just quickly shout out thanks to Josh from ITC Battles App and also other Josh from Down Under Pairings for all the stats, the raw data as
Absolutely.
Well. Really appreciate it. It allows us to do this awesome stuff and can also help improve the game.
As always, thank you very much for listening, everyone. If you like what we're doing and you like the content we put out, please subscribe to us on Spotify or iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. We also do have a Patreon, a shameless self-plug. It helps us make bigger and better content every time and helps play for Luke's number monkey statistic-driven fingers to make these amazing graphs, which actually are not easy to do. And Luke, I wanted to shout out to you. You've actually put a lot of time into making these graphs. You've done a really awesome work. Thank you very much, dude.
Well, thanks, man. Appreciate it. Anything I can do to help. And these graphs will be made available on our Facebook page, our website, and probably post them to Competitive 40K too. So look out for that.
Well, we have a website?
Yeah, we do.
That's sick. I'm going to go look at that. And you all should too. Ha! Plugged.
No. Anyway.
All right, everyone. You have a great evening. Talk to you later.